You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by TrekFan. TrekFan isn't just a Star Trek fan club, it's a challenge. You will explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. To face your first challenge and to find out more, head on over to TrekFan.org.
The journey. To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
I am excited to get back into our normal rotation. Last week, we got to hear some very interesting stories from Lori and Char about their experiences in Las Vegas. And this week, we're going to get back to one of my favorite parts of the show, and that's character analysis. And we are going to do it on the Pixie Kes.
Yes, the pixie. The delicate little pixie.
She may not be a literal pixie, but she definitely had the pixie haircut for a couple of years.
She did. Oh my God.
Classic.
So let's just start off how we normally start off. I mean, I want to know what you guys thought when she first came around. So, caretaker, first impressions. Char, what do you think?
Okay, while we're on the lines of this pixie haircut, the first thought that I had was, oh my God, I hate that hair. I'm always about the hair, apparently. I'm very discriminating about hairstyles, apparently, because I have something to say about all the hairstyles on Star Trek. Yeah, I just thought that wig was absolutely awful. And then when I saw photos later of Jennifer Lean's real hair, I thought, what in the world were they doing those first 2 years? Oh, the poor girl. That was bloody awful. Other impressions, though, because I did have more. I kind of had a love-hate relationship with Kes, actually. There were some things that I really did like about her. I liked the fact that she was gentle but not meek. Because there's a difference. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was gentle and likable because she had kind of this warm vibrance to her, which I think had a lot to do with why she had really good friendships with so many of the crew members on Voyager. So I really liked that. I mean, I would definitely be her friend. So I thought, hey, this is a very good character. She's very well-rounded. However, I was very afraid of the Troy Redux. Possibly her becoming Troy number two because of what happened in Time and Again, skipping from caretaker. I just thought, oh no, they're going to work on her telepathic abilities and everything is just going to be pain and despair. That horrible line that Deanna says in Encounter at Farpoint. No, let's not do that again. And they didn't, though. They developed her much better than they did Deanna, especially with her powers. I got to give them that much. So, Lori, how about you? What were your impressions?
Well, I look back at Caretaker, I just kind of glanced at it, and like the first time you see her, she looks like a Disney princess punching bag to me. I'm going, what in the heck? She comes out from behind that corner, and she has like her face is all beat up because the Kazon have been abusive to her.
Okay. Yeah, I did not understand what you were saying at all.
I didn't know what you meant with that, but now that makes so much sense. That's brilliant.
I just imagined, like, those inflatable punching bags that, you know, like, keep coming up after you hit them.
Yes! The Bobo dolls!
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I didn't think she was that bulbous or rotund, but maybe.
No, she just looked like she had gone a few too many rounds. But, yeah, you know what I'm saying.
I got you. I got you now.
I mean, I agree with you. When they first started talking about her telepathic abilities, I thought, please do not tell us that you sense people being angry. Please don't do that. Please. And they didn't, and I was glad of that. She was interesting to start with. I think what was the most interesting to me was, like, the concept of only living 9 years. That was pretty cool. I thought, well, I hope they explore this. And they kind of did. I don't know. That was interesting to me.
Yeah. First impression, that was pretty intriguing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, because we've never really seen that before in Star Trek. It's always just like, you know, Vulcans live hundreds of years, and, you know, some even more ancient races live even longer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've seen omnipotent races like Q, who are infinite. And then you never really see, like, because if you think about it, how many different kinds of humanoids are out there? This is the first time, at least as memory serves, because I could be wrong, that this is a humanoid that has a natural lifespan that's shorter than ours. I mean, we've seen people who have, like, have to commit suicide once they hit 50 or 60 or something like that. But, like, barring that, 9 years, that's such a short time. That's like a fruit fly in the...
Basically, yes.
Like, in the realm of humanoids.
Yeah, compared to the lifespan that all these other races are having, humans included, because we're living longer in the 24th century. Yeah, this is a blink of an eye, basically. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
To reference a Voyager episode.
I never, I guess I'm in the minority here. I never really saw any parallel to Deanna. Like
lucky
I didn't
you.
I didn't have that worry. I didn't think about it. I really didn't. And I, now that you guys are saying it, I'm like, yeah, that's a legitimate fear that you would have had given at that time. When I first saw her in Caretaker, I was excited because I just thought, I was like, oh, great. Not only do we get a female captain and a female engineer, but we're going to get another female presence who's outside of Starfleet. And I just thought that was, you know, that was a really interesting take. And I, like you guys, I love the whole 9 year thing. I was like, where are we going to go with that? Is she going to die on the ship? Is she going to be able to prolong her lifespan? Which they addressed a couple of times. And I know, again, this is another thing I'm in the minority with, but I liked that she and Neelix had a thing. I like that he was her savior. And I thought it was a nice relationship. I know a lot of people don't, even the producers didn't think it worked. So I know that. I just liked her all around. I liked that she would work in the medical bay and that she had her own flower thing, but this is getting off of Caretaker. But yeah, like in the Caretaker, I like that she was someone who had already had an ingrained sense of exploration.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. She needed to leave her people to figure out what was out there. She wanted to see the sunlight. And not only did she see the sun, but she traveled alongside it. And because she hitched a ride on Voyager. And I just thought that was a great thing to put into her DNA, is that she's an explorer and she hitched a ride with a whole bunch of other explorers. Mm-hmm.
That was another thing that I did like about Kes. She was very much a think-for-herselfer in this culture that had been really just kind of muted over time, very complacent.
Mm-hmm. They became dependent on the caretaker and just kind of let him do whatever for them. And they didn't have to do anything for themselves. And she didn't want to stay that way.
Right. So that was, from that, you can clearly see that she thinks differently from her people, realizes that there is a bigger world out there, and she's eager to explore it. So even though she's just this teeny little Okampan girl, she's not a total badass, I would say, but at the same time, she's determined and she stands up for herself. She knows when to speak up. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, they definitely showed her as being strong in the first one, like when she went back to her people with the Voyager crew and like she's, you know, telling the people, like, listen, we have to help these strangers. I saw the sunlight, you know, I know more than you. I know what's out there. Mm-hmm. And then they say no. And she's like, fine. We're gonna find your people no matter what. And then she, like, you know, puts her nose in the air and then runs in the other direction. And I just thought she was strong, and I loved her voice. You hated the hair. I loved her voice, and that's all that I could focus on, is that it was such a warm, and it was not like in the back of the throat or through the nose like Janeway, but it was very distinct. And
yes,
yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, Jennifer Lean has a very rich voice. Be really good for podcasts, guys.
Well, I was just about to say that she would be great for voiceover work, which I would love to see her do more of if she's still interested in acting, you know.
Well, that's the thing, is I think Jennifer Lean quit acting altogether when she started having kids. She got married, I think, in 2001, had her first baby in 2002, and has since kind of gone into a medical direction. Last time I heard, she was studying to be a nutritionist.
That was
an interview with StarTrek.com, but that was, what, 2010? Hmm. Just after Star Trek Las Vegas that year. So, I mean, some time has passed. I mean, she could be completing her studies. She could be working by now. Who knows? Jennifer Lean, if you're listening, you need to give your fan base an update. We want to know what you're up to.
One thing that I want to talk about with Caretaker, just real quick before we move on, is, okay, so they only live 9 years. And we know from Elogium that you only are able to have children once between the ages 4 and 5. Okay, and she's not even 2 yet, as we know from, you know, from Twisted. So right. Where are her parents?
Well, we know about her father who died.
Mm-hmm. Why did he die?
We don't know.
We don't know. Okay, so we did know that he died. I guess I had forgotten that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was in Resolutions. She tells Tuvok that, kind of as a last ploy to go back for
right.
Janeway and Chakotay.
Yeah, the little, I'm going to talk you into this speech. That's right.
Basically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's he died. Yeah, he died when she was 1. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. It still doesn't talk about her mother.
Not at all. We have no idea.
Okay, no. So, like, it's just weird to me. Like, if she was still alive, you'd think, oh, you made it back underground. Maybe I should go say hi to Mom. Or maybe ask her if she wants to come with me because, you know, crap's going down with the case on Ogla. You know?
Yeah, but no. Mm-mm.
Because technically
know.
she should still be alive unless there was an accident or something. So
it's possible.
And also,
yeah, that was never explained.
No.
And also, let's just briefly talk about how if a race is only allowed to have 1 child,
yes,
mathematically
let's do
that. They would die out very quick.
Yeah, yeah, I had some problems with the episode Elogium. I know you like it, but
I do.
It just gets a little goofy on Okampan reproductive rituals and the rules of their procreation.
Here's this stuff on my hand, and this is called this, and I'm going to do this. Huh?
I'm going to eat dirt, and mustard's going to appear on my hands, and we've got to get all sticky with each other.
Yeah.
If you look at it from, obviously the writers did not think this through or are not very skilled with math. But even...
Which is possible.
Yeah, even if you disregard the math aspect, if you look at it from an evolutionary standpoint, there's no way in mm-hmm. hell that these primitive Okampan would have survived holding each other's hands, even if you just think of it from like a jungle perspective. Like, okay, we got to hold each other's hands for something like 3 days straight. Yeah, how are we gonna fend off predators or other people who want to mate? Don't know. We're going to have to do it, you know, like just using our legs, you know. So it's just, yeah, it's... I like the episode for what it represents, but I do not like the way that they interpret their waves of reproduction.
Absolutely not. It makes zero sense that they have only 1 child, especially with such a small lifespan. You would think that with animals that live on planet Earth, they would have a litter.
Yeah, or they would be driven to mate as soon as possible. And apparently, they're middle-aged by the time they're able to mate. What?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Mm-mm.
Just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, they were just being creative for creativity's sake, I guess.
Yeah, they just wanted to be different. They're like, oh yeah, this is different from this, and this is different from what we're used to. But there's a reason why this works, is because we're still alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just barely.
But yeah, okay, so let's, you know, we talked about what we liked about her. Let's talk about what we didn't like. Let's move on to, you know, past caretaker. What did we dislike about her character as we kind of move on throughout the series before she left?
Mm. She had the worst scream I have ever heard in my life.
Yes, Lori, thank you.
I guess I don't remember her screaming.
In Cold Fire, when she started to melt Tuvok, and she started,
right.
I can't even do it, and I'm not.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Gross.
It's not even like one prolonged scream. It's like,
yes. Terrible.
Yeah.
It is the most primal, craziest thing I have ever heard coming out of a woman's mouth. I mean, wow. I have never heard anybody scream like that before. It is insane.
Mm. All right. Okay. Well, okay. So besides the little things like her scream.
Little things.
let's talk
it wasn't
about,
little
like,
at the time, Tristan. No, no, no.
Let's talk about like character arc and like moments and things like
that.
Those big storytelling kind of things.
All right. You know what kind of irked me was the fact that they had this wonderful actress. She made the absolute best of everything that she was given. She was superb. And very rarely did they give her episodes just where she was the central character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they could have done more for her. I really think they kind of had a missed opportunity there, and I know the writers were unsure of what they wanted to do with Kes. That's one of the reasons why they said that they wrote her off the show. But they had so much potential, and especially with a good actress, you don't waste that. So I would have liked to have seen more episodes that had a focus on her, sort of like Warlord and Before and mm-hmm. After. But a lot of times when they did give Kes something to do, she wasn't herself. Or she was under the influence of somebody. Yeah, like Warlord, like Cold Fire. Mm-hmm. Like okay, Fury. Come on, let's just have Kes. Can we get to know Kes, please?
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, there's not much history you can explore if she's only 1 year old.
But we could explore her in the present.
That's true.
Sure.
That's true. Very, mm-hmm. very true.
We don't have to delve so much into her past, but let's see what she's doing now, except hiding out in sickbay. Because, okay, she was a great nurse. We got that.
Mm-hmm.
That was fantastic. She hung out in the aeroponics bay. She grew things, destroyed them on occasion. No big deal. That's cool, too. And then they sort of actually dropped that part of it in the later seasons. Like, season 3, was there even a mention of, like, new plants coming in or anything fun like that?
No,
they kind of moved on from it.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a shame.
But one thing that they kind of moved on from, too, I mean, she was always in sickbay, but they didn't really focus on her learning in sickbay and learning how to become,
mm-hmm.
like, she was just kind of like, oh, she was studying like crazy, and then she just kind of was there and was the assistant. I would have loved to have seen a couple years go by, maybe even, like, by the end of season 3, like, her perform her own surgery or something.
Yeah. Yes, I was just thinking of that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
It would have been cool to see the doctor guide her through her first surgery.
Right, right, mm-hmm. and with these people living only 9 years, they have to be able to learn faster or be more adept at things, something like that. So granted, you know, we see people who have to go through, like, as a doctor, you have to go to school for 20 years. Maybe she could learn it in 2.
Right.
Just especially with having the doctor giving her completely personal attention. So that's something that I liked that they went with it. But I would have liked to have seen it go a little further.
It would have been cool to see her develop, like, those mental powers, maybe a little bit more. I mean, she did do, if you're talking about surgery, she did kind of do surgery in The Gift. She used her mind to do surgery. What did she, was it on 7 or something like that? Like, there was some
weird
implant issue, something like that. But, I mean,
that
would have been interesting to me to see more of that. I mean, not bending spoons or anything like that, but something, do something with it that would have been a positive thing. That would have been interesting.
Yeah. You know, I feel like they kind of had a big jump in her telepathic abilities between, say, season 2 and then when she left in The Gift. She went from boiling a cup of water with Tuvok to suddenly, I am bigger than all of you and I must evolve.
Yeah.
That's how they do it in TV. If you look at Buffy like what they did with Willow, like she showed an interest in Wiccan culture, and then all of a sudden she was the most powerful witch of all time.
Yeah, how about some in between here?
Yeah, like, I mean, I have to give Buffy credit, though, because they did spend more time developing her character than, way more time than they did with Kes. And I like what they did there, but you see that in, like, there's so many TV shows out there that just don't have patience.
That's
the main thing. And that's why there's so many shows that are on. That's why I feel like AMC is doing so well with their original shows, because they have shows that take their time but remain interesting. Mm. And, you know, when you compare something like Breaking Bad or Mad Men to, you know, Voyager, it's apples and oranges. You cannot say one is better than the other because of its completely different formats. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, sure. I get you. And I think maybe Hollywood has possibly learned its lesson from the past. I mean, I don't think it was just Voyager doing this either. I think it was a lot of shows
in
the 90s.
No, I'm saying TV shows. I'm not just saying Voyager. I'm saying TV shows don't have patience.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think actually, they are slowing down a little bit nowadays. And that's refreshing. I want to see the progress. It's okay to take it a little slow.
Now, speaking of her only living 9 years, what did you guys think of the episode Before and After when we actually got to see her at age 9?
I love that episode.
That was neat. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it too. And I guess one thing that I did like about the reproduction of Okampan women is when, like, we see her giving birth in the shuttlecraft. Tom is behind her, and he's like, "I can see the toes."
It's so cute, yeah.
Yeah, like that's, we only get that on Star Trek,
right? And, yeah.
Yeah, carrying that baby on your back, like, I don't know, that was strange. It was just different.
Now, how weird would that have been if we actually see her throughout her pregnancy on the show? Like, she just has a hump for however many months, you know, and she's just walking around like the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Kind of like the reverse of a kangaroo. It's like this pouch on her back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would be kind of unusual. It would be the most unusual maternity uniform ever.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you guys like about that episode? And was there certain things in that episode that you would have liked to have seen come to fruition? Or were you glad that it was just a glimpse?
I know a lot of people were pining for Tom and Kes to get together. Even though by that point there was already hints of Tom and B'Elanna, I know a lot of people were shipping Tom and Kes. I'm glad that did not happen, actually. I always liked how they sort of played with it. And then, of course, we got the spaghetti fight to end it all. But then, no. We're not going to go there. What I did like is we actually did finally, and this was, I think, the only time that we really saw the Okampan lifespan be explored.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
She yes. had her daughter, and then her daughter had a son with Harry.
Yeah.
And so you see this kind of evolution happening, which when you're only with 150 people, I guess that is what happens. Let's just face it. Let's deal with it.
Let's just talk about how weird it is that, like, think about it from Tom's perspective. He'll live 100 years. Kes only lives 9. And so if she has a kid when she's 4 to 5 years old, that means that her daughter was only 4 or 5. Yeah, it was only 4 or 5 when Harry, like, hooked up with her, got married with her, and had his grandchild. So in Tom's eyes, his daughter of 4 or 5 had her own child. So from, like, from an Okampan perspective, that's completely normal. From a human perspective, that has got to mess with your mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially going from having your own child to being a grandfather within the span of about 4 or 5 years.
Within about 4 or 5 years.
What?
That is insane.
Just the concept of Tom being a father is something difficult to accept, but a grandfather? Wow. Just wow.
For humans, that is a leap that is just a bit much in that span of time.
What is he, like, 35 maybe? Maybe less than
that?
Yeah,
let's say.
Yeah, that's a little strange.
Oh, wait, Tom?
No, younger than that, probably.
Yeah, way younger than that when this was going on. But, yeah, no, I'm kind of with you about how I can't. It was hard for me to picture him as a father. I'm glad we waited until season 7.
Yes, with B'Elanna.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Char, I think I understand where you're coming from, because I'm glad that they, you know, teased it and with Tom and Kes getting together, but I'm glad that they didn't pull the trigger, because it would have been a little weird, and I love the B'Elanna-Tom relationship so much. I wouldn't have wanted to miss out on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I completely understand what you're saying. So, okay, so moving on from before and after, what were some good Kes moments? We have a couple minutes left, so let's talk about some of our favorite Kes moments, and then we'll talk about when she left.
One of my favorite Kes moments is in Projections, where she's trying to make the doctor think that they were married. That was so funny to me. That just made me laugh so hard. You don't love me, are you saying? You don't love me? Oh, that was so hilarious to me.
With the yes. dream within the dream.
Oh. Yeah. You know. It was Inception before Inception.
Exactly. Yeah. So, like, I guess our marriage is over then.
What are you saying? Yeah, I love that. Melodrama.
And I love that when they showed her as human, all they did was just cover up her ears, like, with her hair.
Right.
You know, like,
oh, yeah.
They didn't even show Jennifer Lean just without the makeup, because they're like, no, we'll just cover it up with your wig, because we have to shoot you in this scene later on. So
definitely.
My favorite moment that I can think of right now is also with the doctor. It's when he makes himself sick. He programs himself to have a cold, but she does not tell him that she programs it to not end when he specified. So he really understands the misery of it all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I just thought that was grade A snark. from lovely little Kes.
She learned from him. She learned from the best. Definitely.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
So good for her. I really enjoyed that. Tristan, what have you got?
I guess when it comes to one of my favorite moments, it's in the episode Peturation, which was actually directed by Jonathan Frakes, which I think is pretty cool. I know a lot of people don't like that episode, but I do. And I like how she has a friendship with Tom, and she has a relationship with Neelix, and she loves them both. And yet, it shows that his jealousy and Tom's, I don't know, lack of understanding gets in the way. It doesn't just affect the two of them. It affects Kes. And I like that they focus on that, about how she's getting upset, she's angry, and I love that death stare that she gives the doctor
when she's
just in no mood. Like, that's just amazing, because every woman has that look.
Yes,
and
we do.
She was able to call it up on command, and even the doctor, who is holographic and not a real man, was just like, oh, okay, I know to shut up when I see that face. But I love that there was a scene later on when she is explaining to, I can't remember who she's talking to, but she's like, I'm just so angry at both of them. And she's also worried at the same time, because they're trapped on that planet. She's angry and worried, and it's a real emotion that we all go through when someone we care about is in danger, but yet it's their own stupidity.
Right, and yes, that's what this episode was.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I just felt like it was multifaceted, and she was able to portray that, and I just thought she was a fine actress if we only had that as an example.
Right. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, they really should have given Jennifer Lean more of that, because she nailed it. She was a fantastic actress.
Yes,
it's kind of sad that she's no longer in the profession, but hey, you know, life changes.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes mm-hmm. that happens.
Yeah, I think maybe she wanted to get out of the rat race.
Well, I think she was out of the rat race to be like, because she was forced out.
Well, on Voyager, I mean, she did do some stuff afterward.
That's true.
She did
TV. You're
she did a couple of movies. One of my favorites, actually, Salt Lake City Punk, SLC Punk.
Yeah.
Great, great film. Check that out if you haven't already.
Yeah, she was also in American History X, which Avery Brooks was in, too.
That's right. Mm. Yeah, another great movie. Check that out.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Okay, reading the background information on Memory Alpha, because we all do it.
of course.
You know, talking about how she was written off the show because they said that it was a simultaneous decision to bring Jerry Ryan on and kick Kes off. I don't believe that. But that's what they say, you know, saying they're like, oh, yeah, no, we wanted to get rid of someone and then bring someone else on. It just happened to be at the same time, whatever. So I always heard a rumor, and we've talked about this a little bit before, that they were, you know, and we'll just gloss over it real quick, is that they were going to get rid of Garrett Wong. Because they weren't happy with his performance. They weren't happy with his character. And also, apparently, like, he was showing up late all the time and just didn't care. This is all rumors. And so they were going to get rid of him. But then at the last second, he was on, like, the top 20 hottest young Hollywood list in People magazine. And they're like, oh, crap, we're getting free exposure.
It was People magazine's Most Beautiful People for 97.
There you go, yeah. And so then they're like, okay, well, we can't get rid of him, so let's get rid of Kes. I mean, if you look at... You know, he was about to die.
In Scorpion.
And that was when he was going to die. And so that maybe that just gave credence to the rumor. But I've heard so many people who have talked with Garrett Wong and met Garrett Wong and gotten to know Garrett Wong and said that, like, he's an amazing guy, a great person to work with. So it just kind of makes me feel weird that you hear this rumor, but then you also know that Garrett Wong's really cool. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's really tough because we're on the outside looking in. We weren't on the set. We don't really know what went down, and we weren't in the writer's room deciding the course of action. We'll never know, you guys. Unless we get a really candid interview for the Voyager Blu-rays, if and when they come out. Maybe then we'll get some slice of truth.
Maybe. And that would be really awesome if by the time the Blu-rays came out, they interviewed Jennifer Lean, like, all these years later. And that would be fantastic.
It would. Yeah. And I'd like to hear it from the writers' mouths myself, not just hers. I'd like to hear everybody. And I'd like to see a little bit of friction. I'd like to see some confrontation. You know, I kind of like Jennifer to be in the same room with them and say, why did you a-holes do that? You know what I mean? I want to
actually.
Down.
I don't know if I want to see that. Yeah, I don't want to see
that. Oh, I mean, it would be civil, but at the same time, you would just be on the edge of your seat, just waiting for what they're going to say.
Well, anybody who
am I asking for too much?
Maybe.
Oh, okay.
Well, anybody who likes the Kes character like we do, but want a little bit more backstory, even as limited as it is, you've heard us talk about it before, but please listen to or read the Jerry Taylor novel, Pathways. It's fantastic, and even though Pathways was written after Kes left the show, we still get that backstory as told by Neelix. I do believe
right.
so.
She is also mentioned in The Eternal Tide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ever so briefly, she makes a cameo, basically.
And she also does in String Theory Evolution.
Oh, okay. So there is a little bit in the novel verse. Some more.
Little bit in the novel verse, and you would be stupid if you didn't use Kes in the novel.
You would be. In some way or another.
Yes, thankfully, these people are not stupid. Yes. So I guess we're all on the same page. Where, like, we like Kes. We think that Jennifer Lean is a strong actress, and it pretty much is the writer's fault that things weren't working, not Jennifer's.
Sorry, writers, but you kind of dropped the ball on this one.
Yeah.
Had a good thing.
I mean, writers have it hard, especially when you have executive producers just coming at you at all angles. So I feel like maybe it was a group failure.
Maybe so. Maybe a groupthink failure, even.
Because even Jerry Lee Taylor herself said, yeah, she was sad to see her go. Like, she had, like, I read an interview, there was kind of a lamenting of that, like, it was out of her hands for some reason, like, she was outvoted.
Right, but you know what? On the same token, I read an interview with her saying, we just didn't know what to do with the character. Whether that was herself or the writers as a group, as a whole.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unfortunate.
Well, I think that wraps it up for us. We love Kes. But she's gone, and we'll have 3 fond seasons to remember her by.
Well, but she's not really gone. She's just out there.
She's out there somewhere.
She is out
as
there.
Some ethereal being.
Well, we have an iTunes review that we need to talk about.
Yes.
And from the great Tim Pyland, I hope I'm pronouncing that correct, he gave us a nice 5-star review and had some really great things to say about us. And we want to thank him on the podcast. And all of you who would like us to mention your name on the podcast, give us a 5-star review on iTunes, give us a nice review, and we will talk about it. And if you want to talk to us outside of the podcast, you can go to trek.fm/forums and create a conversation for everyone to contribute. Or you can go to trek.fm/contact. And send us an email and or a voicemail. And so next week, we are going to be talking about an episode that, well, failed to live up to certain expectations. And so what we're going to do is we're going to rewrite the fight. That's right.
Ugh.
We're going to rewrite the fight with Chakotay, one of the most underused characters, and has some of the worst standalone episodes.
This is one of them.
This is definitely one of them, and this is what we're going to, like, what we did towards Fury is what we're going to do towards the fight. So please tune in next week. And Char, where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me at Oh the Profanity. How about you, Lori?
You can find me at LoriS68.
And you can find me at The Insane Robin. And what else you can find on the interwebs is our sponsor, TrekFan.org. So please go to TrekFan.org for a unique experience that can only be explained by seeing and experiencing.
Seeing is believing.
Until next week, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!